So, yeah, it's my pleasure to introduce you to some data we gathered last year and the years before about pursuing a doctorate at the University of Konstanz, basically. So, that is me from Quality Management Unit in cooperation with Academic Staff Develop. We developed the surveys together and conducted it as best as can and had some results that we would like to share. First of all, the method to give you like a broader sense of how we have done our work. We are aiming to analyze the whole PhD life cycle and to give answers to a lot of questions concerning the whole PhD phase, from kind of start motivation up to how ending up in a job afterwards. Therefore, we have two different surveys addressing this issue. The first is the Doctoral Researchers Survey. We've done this online during March 2019. Invitation went to 1,456 persons. That's basically all the doctoral researchers. We had an adjusted response rate of 39%, so a very high compared to other surveys that you might know or that we have conducted at the university. That's the first part, and you will have most of these data you will see on the next slides. Some of the, towards the end of the presentation, some of the results are from the Doctoral Graduate Survey that has been conducted online between 2015-16 and winter semester 2018-19. 761 invitations to the doctoral graduates, who graduated 1.5 year before the survey took place. And we there had an adjusted response rate, which was even higher with 49%. So at around about half of them answered our questions. Yeah, to give you like a bit more of a clue who was participating and if that's kind of what we normally have in our sample, some sociodemographics about the doctoral researchers study, so the ones who were in the process at the moment. 48% female, which is in the sample 43, so a bit less, a bit overrated in the in our survey participants. Average age of 29.2 years. 83% of them were German, which is also a bit overrated, as we have 75 in the sample. 30% said they have a migration background, and 38% have a non-academic home educational background. 12% have already children, and 5% care about relatives. Yeah, so that's kind of who we have in the sample, in the survey as participants. And to show you how they are spread over disciplines, we've got 50% in the humanities, which is in the sample 21%. And we have maths and natural sciences 52%, which is in the sample 47%. So maths and natural sciences are a bit overrated in the participants. And we've got law, economics, and social sciences with 26%. The first question that might come up is, why don't we have section 1 to 3 here? That's because we want to have a good basis for comparisons to other studies, German-wide, maybe even worldwide at some point. So that's why we have put them into the disciplines like the Statistisches Landesamt does it. And therefore, the main issue I would think for you might be that psychology, which is for the University of Konstanz, normally within maths and natural sciences, so section one, is not in this among these disciplines, but is counted as a social science. So that's, I would say, the most or the biggest kind of difference between having these disciplines in comparison to our section 1, 2, 3. But so we've got a kind of good spread field with our participants. And I would go now into a bit more detail about the framework of doing a PhD. So how, which type of financing do the doctoral researchers have? You see the most frequent form of financing here, third party funds, 37%. 32% have budget funds and 22% own a scholarship. So they have sometimes more than one funding, bear that in mind. And I've put at the bottom line a term called exclusively external funds with 15%. That means these persons don't have any funding by university or scientific academic organization at all. So that's kind of private funding, huge amounts of money they've got. And on the other scale, those who don't have, who have to rely on family funding, maybe social security funding, and so on. So these 50% vary a lot, I would say, in terms of what they actually have as finance in the background. You also see the amount of money they have to have on hand. So that's gross money per month is 1,607 euro for the whole of the university. There's huge standard deviation within the humanities, a less one within mathematics and natural sciences. So there are just differences between the disciplines. But it's not only type and amount of financing, but it's also about duration of contract. So that's the one that we the next question we've addressed. And what we can see here is that we have more people having longer contracts than we had in 2016. There we had a lot of people saying we've only got 12 months financing so far and don't know how to go on beyond that. Now we have longer contracts or a longer duration of contracts for those who participated in the survey. So that's one of the good points, having already two studies here and seeing a bit of a development. Nevertheless, 46% of all participants said the period assured financing is appropriate. For more than half of it, it isn't. So there's still a lot of work to do to have some stable framework focus on the actual process of doing a PhD. And another part of framework is the overall conditions. So we asked about satisfaction concerning different aspects. You always see the percentage stating the two positive points of the scale, which means in this term, satisfied and very satisfied put together out of a 5-point scale. So supply of literature is very highly rated. Also laboratory equipment, office equipment with 75%. Financing of research and support services with 72%. And financing of livelihood with only, I would say, 55%, which is bearing in mind that Konstanz is a very costly place to live and work. Maybe one reason which can be taken into account for a lower evaluation here. However, that's not only it's not all about just framework and conditions. We also have to look at detailed things like supervision and building up from kind of the bare fact how often they PhD researchers see their supervisor. You can see here once a week, once twice a month, once a quarter, or less frequent. overall, for the university, I think we're having a very good evaluation here. 60% see that supervisors once a week, and 18% at least once or twice a month. However, again, looking at the disciplines, there are huge differences, especially between humanities and mathematics and natural sciences. That's always kind of the picture that comes up, that humanities and mathematics and natural sciences differ a lot, whereas law, economics, and social sciences are somehow in between. Also bear in mind, it's not only the frequency of seeing someone, but also the quality. And this graph doesn't say anything about the quality. And it doesn't say anything about the phase in which the participants who answered here are in. So it might, of course, be relevant to see your supervisor on a very regular basis at the beginning, but maybe you don't even want that at the end or in between. So it's not an evaluation, it's just a matter of a frequency and how often they see each other. However, of course, we asked in detail about supervision and what aspects are appreciated. That was a long battery of items, out of which I only just took some to show you. These are the high approval ratings. Later on, you will see lower approval ratings, but stick to the high end first. 92% said I have the possibility to do independent academic or scientific work. 79% state that they can model their doctorate corresponding to their own needs. And 71% receive constructive feedback from the supervisor. And again, 71% can attend research colloquia within their working group or department on a regular basis, which might be helpful for their own research work. On the other hand, we have lower approval ratings, and I just picked two of them. One is in case of conflict with my supervisor, to whom to turn. 37% say that's the truth for me. And 27% say my supervisor talks over my personal career development with me. Again, this might be different in different phases of the process. But talking about cases of conflict, I think Silke Hill will go into detail in her presentation. So bear that in mind, that we can talk about that later on. We also asked about satisfaction with supervision, of course. Satisfaction very high or high. So 69% are satisfied with the supervision by their supervisor for the doctoral researchers. And now that's the first number out of the graduate study, 68% do that 1.5 years after they graduated. So satisfaction with supervising is on a good level, I would say. And we will see some satisfaction ratings later on as well. Talking about what they are doing and what PhD students or researchers have given as a workload. So what they are, how they are spending their time. We all know that's a very demanding time and a very demanding phase in life, maybe even. We asked them how they spend their time during a normal week, during lecture time in the summer semester, in the winter semester. And they said that they spend overall 46.9 hours with matters of their doctoral research process. This is most of this time is, of course, own research and work on thesis, but also research work at the working group or at a, in a project. Other working group activities, teaching and support of students, and other as a last kind of share. And again, I would like to point out the differences between disciplines. You can see what I just said before. There's always the tendency that mathematics and natural sciences differ the most from humanities, whereas law, economics, and social sciences are somewhat in between. Although the differences do not look that great at the moment. If you look at the overall number of time they spend, but looking at the biggest part, own research work on thesis, that is a bit of a difference if you spend 33 hours or 26 hours a week. Yeah, talking about how much time they spend on their doctoral process, that comes up the question, do they have any burdens? Do they perceive any, any burdens, especially the ones who are maybe determined within the scientific system. And mostly named were limitations of employment by 69%. 65% said the expectation to publish a lot is a burden to them. 61% state that the uncertainty of career prospects is burdenful, and 53% name the lack of separation between work and free time, and in kind of in that line, the lack of compatibility of academics and family is a burden for 48%, whereas a more content-wise aspect, the expectation to release high-quality publications is a burden to 47%. Again, there was a longer battery of items, and I only show you the highest rated, so to say. What we found is that women tend to perceive these aspects as a bit more burdening than men do. I leave this up to you to interpret. From burdens comes the next, follows the next question. Is that a reason to stop doing a doctorate, drop out? So who was thinking or who is thinking about dropout? I again show you some data of the PhD doctoral candidates at the moment, or the doctoral researchers and the graduates in the following. So out of the ones who are at in the process at the moment, 28% say that they seriously thought about dropout already. Again, women did a bit more often than men. But, and now comes the good information, amongst the graduates, 19% at any phase, at some point during their doctorate research status, they thought about dropout as well. And they have all been successful. So they successfully managed to do their doctorate, graduate, come to into professional life. And one out of five thought about dropping out and didn't in the end. Their reasons were difficulties related to research for dissertation, problems with supervising, uncertain career prospects after the PhD. So they managed to overcome these burdens, these reasons were thinking about dropping out, and graduated in the end. So a good point, I would say, if someone's in the doctorate research process at the moment and thinks about dropout, that's not a reason to actually quit, but just maybe a point to consider different ways and kind of find a detour around these problems. And then we come up, they have graduated and they are entering into professional life, but how and how successfully do they do that? As I said at the beginning, we asked them 1.5 years after they graduated, and at that point in their career, 96% are professionally working as doctoral graduates, and thereof 92% on a contract, on a regularly employment. So they managed to start their professional life either in academics or outside. 73% out of these utilize knowledge and skills they've acquired during their studies, and they do that on a high level, as they point out. 78% also state that their current job matches their academic degree, so they have done everything right, I would say, and entered professional life in a good way. You can see that also in the satisfaction evaluation they've given us. 77% of all doctoral graduates are very satisfied or satisfied with their jobs, and especially the ones working in science. They have stated a bit higher satisfaction evaluation than the ones not working in science. Job-wise, pursuing a doctorate pays off, I would say. If you compare it to the master graduates from the University of Konstanz, e.g. in permanent contract numbers, so out of the ones having doctoral degree, 49% hold a permanent contract, whereas 38 of the master graduates do. And now comes an aspect which might be discussed in individual ways. Weekly working time, is that the higher the better? You can answer that for yourself. But if you say yes, the higher a weekly working time by contract, the better, then the PhD graduates have also an advantage here with 38 hours compared to 34 hours with a master's degree. One aspect which we maybe not differ too much in evaluation is gross income. I think for most of us here counts the more the better, and for master degrees, for master graduates, that's 3,356 euro per month, whereas with doctoral graduation, they say they have 4,670 euros per month. So that's the differences between PhD and master's degree for the graduates of the University of Konstanz. And summing up, so to say, with the whole overall satisfaction, doctoral researchers and graduates both say they are satisfied with their doctorate at the university. The ones who are still here say are satisfied with doing a doctorate at the university at the moment. The graduates say 80% they are very satisfied or satisfied with their doctorate at the university. And even they would start again, 82% would start their doctorate again, even they haven't even finished. So they're very eager to go on. And that leaves me with with a lot of questions I will address later on in the next month and years, maybe, to improve the situation of PhD researchers at the university. But maybe there's anything striking for you or anything you would like to discuss. And that was what I was would have liked to share with you. So a little notice, there's a PDF report about the whole survey or the two surveys available. I can only provide that in German. I'm very sorry, that's 100 pages long, and I'm welcome to email that to you, or you can download it on the website. Maybe you were wondering why there's no detailed information about the maybe the disciplines that you are in, or especially for the cluster now, the sample is still too small, so I can't really give you detailed results for that for now, but later on we will have them, I'm pretty sure.
Hey, I actually have a question.
Yes.
I was just curious, like in these surveys, does the university collect demographic information on the PhD students? Like, it sounds like you collected some information on the gender at least, but is there also other demographic information, like where they're from, et cetera?
Where they're from?
Yeah, and other demographic information. I was just curious, because like in the US we would collect that, but I don't know if they do it.
Yeah, we tend to ask as much as we need, but as little as we need to, kind of. Of course, in terms of data security. So we do ask them where they come from, and we do ask them different questions about. Well, you can also, if you want to go into very detailed look at that, you can download the questionnaire from the internet website. So. That's all kind of transparently handled. We ask them about their gender, as you have seen, age, where they got their degrees, school education, which country they are from, if they're European, outer European, and so on. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that what you were aiming for?
Thank you.
Welcome.
Yes, welcome to our next presentation. I hope you're still able to listen. My name is Silke Helf. I'm your contact in the academic staff development for all questions concerning your PhD, your doctorate, and your career opportunities, decision-making, and everything you've got in mind. And today I'm very happy to have the chance to tell you a little bit about what we do for you, about what other support services are available for you here at the university. I'd like to give you a little bit of input about possible career opportunities or career areas after your PhD. And we've heard from our survey that your career perspectives are really good. We heard that 1.5 years after the PhD graduation, nearly everybody was graduated here at the University of Konstanz is working and also is quite satisfied with their work. We have data about that as well that are really, really nice. And this is not only something here for the University of Konstanz, but that's something that's true in all Germany. So before I begin, I'd like to ask you two questions, and afterwards the presentation starts. I know that many PhD researchers or doctoral researchers start their PhD with the idea to become a professor one day. I'd like you to answer yes in the chat if that's true for you. So everybody who would like to pursue an academic career to become a professor one day, please write yes in the chat right now. Yes, one yes here. Another one. Not many yeses. So many people. Of course, you still don't have to know it yet and you don't have to decide, but I'd like to give you some information about the academic career path in Germany, how to become a professor here in Germany, professor of the university, or also there are other professorships, like professorships at universities of applied sciences. There are other career possibilities that are science or research related. And there are so many other possibilities that are open for you with a PhD in Germany. First, let's begin with some information about how to become a professor here in Germany. I'll try to share. So let's begin. I think it's quite an important information that not everybody who strives to become a professor will reach a professorship at the university in the end. First, from the many master graduates, about 15% start to pursue a doctorate or a PhD in Germany. Medical doctorates are not included because they are totally different here. But about 15% of the master graduates pursue their doctorate. And only few of them continue with their academic career. Most of the doctoral graduates leave academia right after the PhD or a bit later and pursue other career paths. About 15, 20, 30% of doctoral graduates pursue a postdoc and reach eligibility for professorship by habilitation or habilitation equivalent achievements. And out of those who are eligible for professorships, about 30% will be appointed as university professors. That's not a very high number, but I think it's important to know that not everybody who's got an habilitation or another equivalent achievement or who is eligible will reach the goal in the end to become a professor. However, it's those figures, it's very hard to find reliable data about how many of eligible postdocs will become a professor or will reach a professorship. But I think the numbers show a tendency. However, that's not really bad news because there are so many other possibilities to do research or to pursue other career paths in Germany with a PhD and also after the postdoc phase. If we look at the next slide. First, we look at the slides at the way how to become a professor in a university in Germany, and afterwards we look at other possibilities. As you can see, now you're in your doctoral phase or your PhD phase. There are different possibilities how to pursue a doctorate. It can be a structured program or an individual doctorate. However, after you graduate, you can start your early postdoc phase, postdoctoral phase, and afterwards you have to decide how to get your eligibility to become a professor. The old, or some say even old-fashioned way, is doing an habilitation. It's a very German way that's still very common in the humanities, for example, especially. The habilitation usually should lead to eligibility, but there are other newer ways to become eligible by habilitation equivalent achievements. The most common way or the most known way is to be appointed a junior professor, and after 6 years of junior professorship, you get, if you are positively evaluated, you become eligible for a full professorship at the university. There are also other equivalent achievement possibilities. One other common way is to become a research group leader. There are programs, for example, the Eminöter program, where you can apply for funding for a research group, and as a research group leader, you are an independent researcher. Just as a junior professor, you can have doctoral researchers yourself, and afterwards you are eligible. And of course, there are other ways. If your publication record, if your record of acquiring external funding is quite high, these can be seen as habilitation equivalent achievements. And so you become eligible as a professor in the university. There are also many other possibilities to become professor, to become successful in your career. And that I think is quite interesting, because in the German university staffing system, you can either, if you'd like to stay at the university or in academia at the university, you have to become a permanent professor, or you have to quit sometime, because nearly all the staff positions beyond the permanent professorship are terminate positions, or they are short-term positions. You can only have a position as a, for example, as a doctoral researcher or as a postdoc up to 12 years. And afterwards, you have to become a professor, full professor, or you have to leave. There are only very few positions next to the full professorships where you, that are permanent positions at the university. But there are many more possibilities, and I think it's quite interesting to know that 5 years after the PhD, the majority of PhD holders don't do research or science anymore. They work in career areas outside of science and academia. But a bit less than half of the PhD holders still do research. Some do it in the university, that's the square on the left. Of course, there's a lot of research going on in the industry. Research and development positions in the industry are very common, especially for doctoral degree holders in the natural sciences, and there are career possibilities in non-university research institutes. For example, like in the Max Planck, that I think some of you already belong to. Here, a short overview about the German research system. If you look at the variation between basic research, which is done mostly in universities, and up to applied research possibilities, you have, of course, the universities on top, but there are other non-university research institutes that also focus on basic research, for example, again, like the Max Planck Society. And then going on with the Leibniz Association, the Helmholtz Association, and the Fraunhofer Society, those non-university research institutions also focus on applied research. In between, there are the universities of applied sciences, the Fachhochschulen in Germany, and of course, a career in such a university of applied science can be also very interesting and very rewarding. And in the end, of course, as we have seen in the industry, a lot of research takes place, and that's also very, very interesting, very important, and also in many cases quite well paid as well. If we look here at alternative career paths for doctoral graduates, alternative to university professorships. We have, as we have seen, the scientific careers or the science and research related careers. If you won't become a professor at the university, you can also go for a professorship at universities of applied sciences. you can become a researcher in an independent research institute or in a non-university research institute, as I've mentioned, Fraunhofer, Helmholtz, Max Planck, etc. That there are also other research institutes in museums, libraries, economic research, institutions and with the focus on environmental research, etc., etc. There's a lot of research going on outside of the university. And of course, there are those careers that are closely related to science and research. For example, careers in science communications management or research management and research support. Something that we do, for example, here in the academic staff development is research support. And these are interesting job opportunities. And in funding institutions at the DFG or in Stiftungen, foundations, there are positions for researchers with a PhD. And there's a really great or a big area of non-scientific or non-research related career areas where doctoral graduates are preferred, where your doctorship gives you opportunities such as consulting and auditing, but also corporate management, publishing companies, and for leadership positions in general. Many executives, the next slide will show us that many executives in Germany have a PhD, even if they don't do research, because it's very high valued here in Germany. And all positions with representative tasks also are especially available for people with a doctoral degree. And if you'd like to be self-employed, your a PhD or doctorate will help you as well, especially if you offer consulting services. It will be easier to find your place if you've got a PhD. So it's worth doing the PhD, absolutely, of course. Especially here in Germany, and that's something that's quite unique to Germany. A really great percentage, nearly 40% of all business executives hold a PhD. That's different from other countries, where usually if you do your PhD, you go on with science and research. In Germany, the PhD can be the door to an executive position in different areas. As well as politicians quite often have a PhD, but especially in economy, the PhD is valued. You don't have to be an economist to work in economy, of course, or in the business industry. We've heard about the employment situation of Konstanzer PhD alumni. And here are some data about the employment situation of doctoral graduates in Germany. And as you can see, the career chances with a PhD are really, really big. Also compared to those with just a master's degree. Nearly between 75% and 90% of the PhD graduates are employed. Some are also self-employed. Very few have a lectureship or do an internship or are in parental leave or do further studies. And only those here marked red. So nearly nobody is unemployed. So with a PhD, I think the chances are really, really high that you not only will have a job, but also we have data that show that people with a PhD are usually content with the adequacy of their jobs and also are content with the with their jobs themselves. So let's talk about what the support services can do for you, or what we, the academic staff development, can do for you. So if you ask yourself, how do I plan my doctorate, or how do I cope with maybe some difficult situations, or how can I plan my career, or any other question concerning your PhD phase, or career decisions, or also obstacles, we are very happy to be there for you. We offer professional career advice and also coaching. You can have coaching up to 10 sessions where we will reflect on your situation. We can discuss possible solutions, and in general, we will find a way to solve problems or to overcome obstacles. We also offer seminars and events about science-related competencies, transferable skills, academic and non-academic career paths, about teaching and learning, including digitally enhanced elements, everything, in short, that you need in your doctorate and your career afterwards. And also you can get certificates. For example, the Certificate of Leadership Management and Knowledge Transfer, which can be valuable if you apply for a job outside of academia, also inside of academia, and you can obtain the Baden-Württemberg Certificate of University Didactics, which is quite valuable if you apply for a professorship or a higher postdoc position. If you'd like to do your teaching with ILIAS or with other digitally enhanced methods, we can also assist you there, give you advice. And we offer, for example, the ILIAS Werkstatt. That's a walk-in consultation on ILIAS every Wednesday. Just contact us and ask about it. And of course, we have information platforms for academic careers. And as my colleague already told you, we would like to talk to you, or to tell you what to do if there's a conflict or another obstacle that could happen during your PhD. The first step is always contact me, and we can try and find strategies for possible solutions. But there are also the ombudspersons for doctoral research. These are three professors: Professor Marx, I think most of you will know Professor Marx, but also Professor Miriam Butt and Professor Martin Ibler, who are here for you and who can be contacted by you and give you neutral advice about conflicts or conflict solutions. They can mediate and support you. And everything that can be done can be asked very trustful, and you can find, I think you can find answers if you ask me what to do in case there's really some a problem that you don't know how to go on with. There are also other service institutions, and I give you only a very short overview. I think you'll get the handout, and so you can look that up. There's also the Communication, Information and Media Center, KIM, the Library and the IT Services. We have the Equal Opportunity Office, who gives information and support if you'd like to combine your research with family or other things that are important to you. We offer mentoring. The Equal Opportunity Office offers several mentoring programs. You just can contact them. There's the Welcome Center. Maybe those of you who are international maybe already know the Welcome Center services. We have the support services for people who would like to do research in other countries, the support services outgoing center. I won't show everything now. We have our career service. If you'd like to get some information about careers outside of academia, you can come to us. We can give you advice, coaching, counseling, and advice about different career paths, but you can also contact the career service if you already know where we'd like to go. If you'd like to become self-employed, you can contact the project Kilometer 1, Wissens and Technology Transfer. And of course, there's the international office for all questions related to international careers. So thank you very much for listening. This was a lot of data. And now I'd be happy to answer questions. You can always contact me. of course, I'm happy to answer questions now, but you can always contact me. We can make an appointment and take our time and talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. I could give you information about other support possibilities.
I think that's the key. I think many issues, they come up when you actually get in touch with people. Because sometimes you may not know that you don't know something or that you are missing viable information. And sometimes it's really just cool to contact the person in charge, like Ms. Hell, and just approach them. Hey, I'm a PhD student. I just want to get in touch and get to signal that I'm here, and maybe you can tell me what I'm missing or what I could need or what could be helpful information for me. I would also like to stress that we are the cluster, we are looking forward into collaborating more closely in future also with the academic staff development unit, and whenever there's an opportunity or a chance where we can maybe do a joint event or action or whatever that you feel you might enjoy or that you feel there might be a need, please approach any of us any time, and we will look into developing something to come up with a format that meets your needs. And please spread the word and look into the information again. And also let us know how you, any feedback on what you learned today, whether this was cool for you, appropriate, whether you were missing something, lacking something. Maybe in the future we will repeat this format or do something similar or not, depending on how useful you found this. And so we are open and also rely a bit on your feedback to improve our office for the future. And I will shut up now and give you the opportunity to ask questions if there are any still pending.
I would have a question to Ms. Hell. So very concretely, if I would like to have a plan B, if I don't like to stay in research or I cannot stay in research, what would be your concrete advice, what I have to do to get to a plan B?
Okay, that's a great question. I think the first the first step is to contact us, because we have program especially designed for that, and we would like to assist everybody to have a plan B. I think it's very important to have a plan B, because as the data has shown, you can't be sure to become a professorship, and there's a lot you can do to prepare for that. During your PhD, it's I think it's important to get to know what career possibilities there are available for you. There are many possibilities, but sometimes it takes a while to get ideas what you could do or what paths there are. And that's why it's interesting to do some research about that, to contact us, to get counseling and also coaching for your decision-making process. Also during your PhD, it's sometimes it's possible to get in contact with employers outside of academia, institutions, the industry or whatever. I know of some PhD candidates, for example, who do some private small projects for companies, like writing articles, for example, or doing a small survey for a possible employer or something else. There are so many possibilities to get in touch with possible employers. And also the another very good idea is to create a network, networking. But that's very important to get to know many people. If you'd like to stay in academia, networking is so important, but it also helps you for career paths outside of academia. And of course, you can qualify by courses, leadership courses, project management courses that we offer. There are also other institutions who offer those courses, and you can obtain certificates that can help you get the competencies or improve the competencies that you need, but also get the proof by that certificate in your application that you are ready to begin a leadership, for example.
I had a question. The courses that are provided for PhD students, are they all free? Are they, are there different formats? Can you take courses outside the university? What's the concept for that?
Many courses or information sessions are absolutely free. So our lectures, information events are free. The seminars, it depends. Usually the seminars cost €25 per day. So it's if there's a two-day seminar, it's €50. But in many cases, and we still don't know how it's done with cluster, but in many cases, and I hope it will be that case as well, the institutions pay those fines. So I'm not sure, and it depends a bit also on the development of the graduate school. I'm not sure if the PhD researchers have to pay themselves or if it's paid for them. But it's not more than €25 per day, at least. And most other offers are free. And coaching and counseling is absolutely free. So you can always use that, and we can give you advice what courses to take.
That's great to know. And I'm not sure, because like right now the cluster, we have people from different departments, and I'm not sure if there is yet unifying regulations on who pays the fee. But I would recommend everybody who wants to take a course and finds that I don't want to pay for that myself, please approach us, and we'll sort out who takes over the fee. And I'm sure that the cluster can also take over the fees for cluster, like PhD students who are enrolled in the cluster or working on a cluster project. That should be possible. We don't want people to not attend courses because they find it too pricey. So that's for sure something that we can support. Also, if you have I should have mentioned that we have a little funding pot for PhD students who want to go to a conference or maybe have a another course, external course they would like to attend, and sometimes they can be quite pricey. It's worth approaching us, and maybe you can write a little proposal or application if it's also for an exchange visit at another university or so. There is individual options that we can help or support with. Some of them are not yet in a structural program, but in any case, please come and talk to us, and we can maybe fine-tune our support program also for PhD students in the future. What about, we have a lot of PhD people who are working at the Max Planck Institute, and I know there's sometimes confusion whether they are eligible to take support by the university or not. So that would be my next question.
So, buddy, who is involved with the University of Konstanz is absolutely eligible, and we are very happy to welcome you, and you're part of the program. If you are not here involved with the university, if you are in another institute outside of the university, it depends a bit. But I'd like to say, if you've got a question or a concern and you'd like to have advice or maybe coaching, you can always approach me, and I think we'll find a solution. So I'd say, please approach me.